This is Pure Decking for Thursday, August something, 30th, 2018. The show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and hiding from the robot clone of Alex Jones. I'm Morps. Tonight, I'm drinking the last of my custom blend that I made from the ends of a bunch of other bourbon I had left.
I'm still thinking, if it lasted this long, you may have actually had bourbon that you could have been drinking.
Well, that's possible. Yeah, I did. But, that's all right. It was a fun experiment. And, I mean, it really was the tail end of, like, four different bottles. So. Yeah, Morps. And tonight we have Madman. Madman, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Country Boy Shotgun Wedding. It's, kind of like a Newcastle with a vanilla aftertaste.
That's interesting.
They take a brown ale and they age it with vanilla beans.
Oh, cool.
So I think like secondary fermentation, they toss in a bag of vanilla beans and then yank them out.
Nice. So, let's see. Saying they were stream trouble. Well, it looks like his stream's working. So, maybe it's just Psychros. Let's see, got no station news, nobody else is showing up for the show tonight, which is a touch of a disappointment, but that's all right, we can carry forward. And, I'm still a little leery with the new setup when Psychro said he was having problems, but given all the storms and everything else going on, he's probably just having issues on his end.
Yeah, there's a thunderstorm rolling through my area of the woods right now.
Yeah, it hit around here earlier. So, anyways, I guess we can roll off into the discussion story here. And this one's actually from Dark Reading, and it's this guy, Reg Harnish's opinion. And I'm not quite certain what I think of this. I don't like it. How about that? But so I'm going to read this.
Is this a legal opinion or just an opinion on something?
This is an opinion on privacy.
Okay.
So I'm going to read this guy's blog post. He wrote it in first person, so don't get too confused. So this is by Reg Harnish. It's on Dark Reading. And it's called The Four Benefits of a World with Less Privacy. So He writes, I recently joined the Delete Facebook movement, but not because I thought removing my account would restore my online privacy. I was ready to move on. The truth is, the internet knows more about me, or knows the same about me today than it did when I was a member of the world's largest social network. Whether or not I deleted my account is irrelevant to the state of my online privacy. There will still be a Reg Harnish shadow profile on the platform with thousands of pages of data. My profile will continue to grow as long as my friends and family continue to post photos and information about me, and as long as Facebook follows its practice of monitoring user behavior across the internet via partner sites and ads. My digital footprint isn't going anywhere, but that is unless I decide to drop off the grid for the rest of my life. But even then, my information would still be available, just buried beneath a sea of data. The privacy issue is a problem for a lot of people. I see it differently. In fact, I believe society could benefit from a little less privacy. I'm certainly not advocating for the death of privacy. I tend to side with those who argue that privacy is an intrinsic value that should be treated as a dispensable commodity. It is essential for self-development, and without some level of privacy, we would all lose individuality and conform to one another. That said, here are four benefits of a world with less privacy. Convenience. For the past 3,000 years, cultures commonly prioritized convenience and wealth over privacy. Internal walls in homes didn't exist until 1500 AD with the development of the brick chimney, which needed support beams that ultimately segmented homes' interior space. Before the 1700s, most homes only had one bed because they were too expensive to build. Even today, just about every American has... What does that have to do with privacy? Even today, just about every American has already unwittingly opted out of privacy for the convenience of surfing the web, monitoring their physical activity with fitness trackers, or receiving digital discounts at the grocery store, among many other online activities. By devoting so much of our time online or opting into terms and conditions, we have allowed third parties not only to create digital copies of ourselves, but also to predict our behaviors before we ourselves even know how we are going to behave. Taken to the next level, this could experience a new degree of convenience that rivals some of the best sci-fi films ever created. Already, we are experiencing a degree of high-tech convenience that our forefathers could scarcely have imagined. Plus, with the recent push towards artificial intelligence and machine learning, computers may learn to guide us towards better decisions in our health, relationships, and lifestyles. So, I'm going to stop right there for just a second. Obviously, this guy is totally convinced that the AI is going to tell him how to live his life and that he's okay with that. I have a philosophical argument against that. I don't know about you.
I don't know if it's the AI telling him how to live his life as much as it's just machine learning telling him, here are other things you've watched. Like, on Amazon right now. I've got Amazon Prime. I don't know how much longer I'm going to keep it. But I've watched Earth Final Conflict, which is a sci-fi show I tried to get into when it was actually on television. I just was always doing something during the days that it was on.
Sure.
But it seemed like an interesting show. Same thing with Andromeda, another sci-fi show. What those two have in common is they're written by Gene Roddenberry, the guy that did Star Trek. Amazon has suggested that I would like to watch the original Star Trek, Star Trek's Next Generation, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine, because I've watched two things written by the same dude that wrote those, or at least that genre. So it's not that an artificial intelligence is telling me how to live my life. It's that this database is like, oh, you like this writer. Here's other stuff this writer wrote.
Well,
would you like to watch it?
And to that same point, though, so this is assuming everything's on the up and up. It's like, oh, you know, if the artificial intelligence is going to tell you how to live your life, how do you know that the artificial intelligence isn't telling you to do whatever the company that runs the artificial intelligence wants you to do? We see you don't buy enough, I don't know, Jolt Cola. You should buy more Jolt Cola because you don't have enough energy. You know, I mean, or whatever the advertiser paying for the AI that day wants people to buy, right? So
I don't care. It's still advertising. I'm still wondering where he's going, where we've lost any privacy with...
I think his argument with the way houses were built were based on the idea that people were previously less concerned about their privacy and that they lived in open homes and stuff like that. But
prior to a few generations ago, it wouldn't have been odd for us to walk in and see our parents having sex.
Well,
and I've seen it several times by the age of, I don't know, 12.
But, you know, he's saying that, oh, this is a new trend that people care about this kind of stuff. But it's like, yeah, but people haven't abused this kind of stuff before in the past either. Not like this. So, I don't know. I guess, and he even says unwittingly in the article when he's describing. I don't see how that argument holds up. Oh, well, you're unwittingly giving all this away for convenience. Well, that's fine. But I'd like that decision not to be unwitting. I'd like to know what these companies are doing so I can actually make an informed decision. Maybe I don't want to wear a Fitbit and have my every movement tracked. Maybe I'm going to choose to use a phone that isn't going to track my... Or at least if I know that my phone is tracking me, I know that maybe I ought to leave it at home if I'm doing something stupid or something that I don't want tracked. Or, you know, think of a reason, right? So...
The only problems I have with sharing of data is actually data that I don't have control over, and that's mainly the credit agencies and what they're sharing and compiling. Because when they lose their shit, I lose my money. I don't have a problem with Facebook or Amazon. And the reason for that is Facebook and Amazon are trying to sell me shit.
Yeah, well, you also have a choice. No. You don't have to use them.
Yes, I also have a choice. I don't have to use them. That's also really cool. But the only issues I've ever seen with tracking have all been with things that I actually don't have any control over. And still don't.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much... I'm a very big Fourth Amendment guy. I don't think the government should look into my shit unless I've given them a reason to. I understand people wanting privacy, but I also wonder how much of this is people kind of going Alex Jones level crazy on they're watching too much of my crap. Because...
Well, and, you know, too, I was kind of hoping Static was going to stick around for this one because he often argues this point of view that, you know, because, yeah, a lot of these companies, sure, they've got data on you and about a million other people, so it's not like somebody sitting there looking over your shit. You just have points that are showing up in a database somewhere that may or, you know, that are going to trigger an automated response. It's not like somebody's sitting there looking at it unless, you know, and they have a reason to investigate you.
A lot of this, like his point on the getting a discount at a grocery store. There are some grocery stores that are asking for my email address, so those actually could try to link something.
User joined your channel.
But, like my Kroger card?
Yep.
Kroger does not know that Madman bought Flaming Hot Lay's potato chips, lunch meat and Hawaiian rolls, and a gallon of milk. They know number 827554 whatever bought that.
Well, that's because you and swiped a card and never actually filled out the form.
Oh, God, why would I ever fill out the form? The card works without it. I mean, people actually fill those things out?
Yeah.
Oh, God. But, yeah, they don't know what I'm doing. They know what a number's doing. I'll drop the card and get another one if I ever, you know, lose the card I have. And even that, what they're doing is, what items are selling, how can I jack up the rate on my vendor? Because those chips that I bought... Kroger's doesn't stock that area. Lay's stocks that area. So they're telling Lay's, this is what's selling. You might want to bring some more of that in. We can get more customers.
Sure.
Not a bad thing.
So, well, and they're also trying to say, well, people who buy this bag of chips also tend to buy this can of salsa. I don't know. I'm just, but I mean, I don't think you're wrong on that. I don't get this guy's argument that it's for convenience. I really don't. I don't think he's... Well, okay, let me put it this way. I don't think he's made that argument in this article.
So far, he hasn't.
He's just saying it could be better.
Now, the only thing that this sharing of information I know of has made things more convenient, and I don't think they should be more convenient, is the issuing of credit. I think that should be difficult because... That's something that's life-changing. If someone easily gets credit in my name and then easily spends me into debt, I'm fucked, and it could take me months or years to dig out of that if I ever get it straightened out and my credit's damaged.
Right.
So that's where we've automated and made things convenient and convenient to the detriment of ourselves.
So one moment. Are you has joined the game. Hello.
Sorry, running late today.
So I would ask what you're drinking or what you're doing, but I'm just, you know, what would you like to intro?
I'm currently slamming down a coffee as hard as I can to get the extra caffeiney goodness with a pint of less blood. Get that jitter going. Yeah, I got to mix some paint later, so.
Now's the day to drink.
Hells yeah, man.
You're never going to be a lighter weight than you are right now.
Dude, I've been doing this for months.
Oh, you're storing it in the refrigerator, so the next time you go out to do home renovation, you can just jack yourself with your own blood like some of those Olympic athletes were doing a while back?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Oh, no. He's saving it for recycling. Don't you know his medical issue?
All right.
He's Iron Man.
I'm building a real doll. A real, real doll.
Creepy.
It is. Think about it. So, wow. I wonder if you get blood sacks for real dolls.
Possibly.
Fleshing.
But now I kind of want to make a sword out of your blood.
I'm flashing back to the Vampire the Masquerade days, and things just got weird. Anyways, so we're reading an article in Dark Reading, are you, that a guy wrote arguing that we should have less privacy in the world.
I think I've read this article, and I was listening to Mad Men. Yeah, I think he's coming at it from a convenience standpoint. But I don't think I'm going to be arguing for it just yet.
Well, I don't think he makes the point that it's actually more convenient. I think he's just acknowledging that people are unwittingly giving up privacy for convenience. And my argument should be that's fine. You should have the choice. You should know what you're doing.
I think it's rolled so hard and fast in the last 4 years that people have just gone, fuck it, I'm rolling with it because it just makes my life easier. I'll worry about it. When something happens, you know what I mean?
Sure.
They hear all the stories about people, you know, losing their ID and stuff like that to theft, and they go, "Well, it won't happen to me." And you know, odds on, it's not going to.
Well, let's go to a second point here. Reduced cybercrime. The simple fact that we place value on our privacy makes it worth stealing. For instance, Social Security numbers were never meant to be more than a way for tracking the earnings histories of workers in the U.S. Nowadays, you can't do anything without providing that number for verification. What was once a worthless 9-digit number now can be used to open a bank account in somebody else's name, receive their benefits, and ultimately steal their identity. The moment we stop using our SSNs as a form of ID, criminals would no longer be interested in stealing that information because it would be worthless. The same goes for all information. Of course, some degree of privacy is essential for maintaining national security and financial stability, but that doesn't mean that we should be assigning false values to outdated forms of identification. Just like our SSNs, if other information such as corporate databases, national security agency records, and the security cameras that monitor our city streets were made public, criminals would be less likely to steal it because that information would be worthless on the market.
No.
I don't think he realizes
the reason I'm stealing your money isn't because your money's private. It's because I want to buy a car to whore.
Well, okay. So no disagreement. But he's saying, well, you know, if we didn't use our SSNs as identification, nobody would be trying to steal SSNs. That's true. They'd be trying to steal whatever we were using in place of the Social Security numbers. So that's just moving the problem around. That's not solving it.
Yeah, they're now stealing my driver's license number or my penis length, whatever we're using for identification. Yeah, I had to throw that in there.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think, how would you use that for an identification?
Everything that we have private.
Sir, can you stand up on the stool? You're gonna need to lean into that scanner a little bit there.
Yeah, but everything that we keep private is private because it's valuable. We're not keeping it private necessarily because it's private.
Yeah, I mean, they've just decided to use Social Security numbers. It's not like, you know, I mean, yeah, there's the driver's license number. I mean, you could issue some form of a national ID based on some hardcore crypto, but ultimately people are still going to lose the damn card or chip or USB key or, unless you're like tattooing it on the inner lip and there's some, or the barcode on the back of the head, there's some good cyberpunk imagery for you.
The Social Security number wasn't arbitrarily chosen as to why we use it for credit and keeping track with people. The reason it was chosen is it was the only identification number that wasn't being recycled at the time. For a long time, in different states, your driver's license, they just reissued it if someone died. So my driver's license number could have theoretically belonged to someone else. There wasn't any, this number's being removed from the system because it's been used. It's, this number's inactive right now because it's in use. Once it wasn't in use, it could be reissued.
Well, I mean, you could do some kind of public-private key crypto, but I still feel like those are going to get stolen, right? Because ultimately, still, it's... Now, you're talking about 128 or 256 or 2048 characters, depending on whatever kind of key algorithm you're using. But it's still a string of numbers. I mean, it's not like you're going to memorize it like you do your social, but you know, people will still lose control of it.
Yeah, because it's still going to be stored somewhere, and it's still going to be used to apply for a home loan or to get a job, so it's still going to be useful. Someone's still going to want to take it because it has value.
Or worst case, they sit there and brood them until they can just clone them. I mean, the moment that's broken. But I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know on what to replace it with. I do. I mean, Cycros in the IRC is going nuts about, you know, combination biometric public-private key. And, you know, it'll be impossible to break, but I don't know about – well, oh, no, I misread it. He said it's still possible to break, but, you know, making it a lot harder to steal this stuff, which, you know, fair enough. We can – I think that's a fair argument, and using that instead of the SSN, but that stuff is still going to be kept private. It's not going to be
– yeah, it's – I don't know how making it public is going to reduce cybercrime. It's like saying if we – if we make murder legal, we're going to reduce crime. Well,
you're going to reduce.
We're not
going to
reduce
statistic.
We're going to reduce the statistic. There's still going to be murders, and the 45 people murdered in Chicago. The statistic isn't bad. The fact that 45 people lost their lives is bad. So we can say, instead of 45 people got murdered, 45 people bought ice cream sundaes. But if ice cream sundae still means murder, it's bad.
Well, not only that, but you think about this for a minute. Okay, how do most people have their identity stolen? There's two major ways it happens nowadays. The first is a credit card skimmer, right? So they skim, well, at least they get the credit card stolen that way. They get a skimmer or they break into some company that stored all your information and, you know, steal it. Now, if you are doing proper public-private key crypto, and that means nobody should have anything but your public key, that would be fine. But if they steal your – I mean, how many companies do that correctly? Those three digits or four digits on the back of your credit card, they're not supposed to store those either, yet a lot of companies do.
Target did. They might still do.
Yeah.
They did.
So, I mean, I can just and people aren't going to, you know, even if you say, oh, no, you're only supposed to do the public key. You're not supposed to store the private key. I mean, people will do it. That's the problem. Now, if you make your token correctly, like everybody gets issued an ID card or something where, you know, the thing won't give up the damn private key. It just does challenge response to prove that it has it. Okay, fine. Now, you know, you still have the same problem of people losing the damn cards. So I don't know how
cloning
you...
and
yeah.
I mean, I'm seeing what Cycros is saying that the two-step verification of a retina scan and that card may be a thing. But Jesus, man, you think about how inconvenient it's going to be paying by credit card. You know.
Well, I mean, yeah, because his argument before was that less privacy would be more convenient. I think in this case it won't be.
No, I think you're adding extra steps.
So, I mean, I'm not saying I have the answers. I don't think this guy's making a strong argument for this less privacy. I mean, I think there probably are some real arguments for being, you know, for having less privacy in things. But
I could see a good argument on less convenience. How long does it actually take to scan a thumbprint or to, well, I don't want a light shining into my eye. So we'll go with the thumbprint scanners that were tried to implement a few years ago.
Yeah, on
how
proper
big of any convenience is it?
On proper hardware? Not that much.
It's a few seconds. We can live with a few seconds longer in a grocery store line.
So,
I don't know, man. But it is definitely an interesting conversation.
Yeah. So
one that's really going to have to be hashed out.
You're right about that. This will have to be addressed sooner rather than later because it is only going to get worse.
Yeah.
Especially with, you know, because, you know, Cycros is saying SSN theft is a bigger problem, and he's talking about using a different identity system to replace the SSN. I thought we were clear that, yeah, we all agreed that that's what we were talking about. But I still feel like you're going to run into tons of problems with theft of this stuff. Now, if you can make that harder, that's great. but you're not going to be more convenient, and you're not changing your privacy so much as just rearranging just hardening the existing system by using a different identification number than an SSN. You're still going to try to keep that identification number private, or at least a way of proving that that's you private. His next point here is live longer, and the logic on this one, it blows my mind. I pre-read a good chunk of this article before I decided to use it for our discussion. So, tailored advertisements and discounts showing up on your social feeds are just a couple of the many benefits of shared personal information. Pulling back the curtain of privacy could save lives, too. Right now, our medical data is protected by the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act. But many people don't realize that their health data could be the missing link preventing the next big breakthrough in medicine. If we shared our medical data freely, imagine the amount of data that medical providers, entrepreneurs, and companies could harness in the name of research. Imagine what your health insurance rate would be when your health insurance company finds out how much you actually drink. The new medical he didn't write that. I'm inserting that. New medical treatments and cures would be discovered, perhaps at unprecedented rates, not only saving lives, but allowing humans to live longer. Take the deadly drug Vyvox. For example, researchers reported in a 2013 Iowa Law Review article that if patients who took the deadly drug had shared their health information publicly, statistics could have detected the side effects much earlier, possibly saving as many as 2,500 lives, or 25,000 lives.
I think it's really adorable that this guy thinks that evil doesn't exist.
Oh, he's not arguing that evil doesn't exist, but he is right here. If we allowed people to correlate our medical information, we're now one huge medical experiment, and the amount of information, both good and ill, that can come out of that would be amazing. Because it's not just, here are the better medicines. We could also go with, here are the better bioweapons. But yeah, it would be amazing that this would actually help. Now, I don't know if I want my name attached to Bob has AIDS, but if we don't know, give my medical records a PIN number and say patient 0005 has AIDS and here's his treatments, I'm cool with every doctor on the planet having that, possibly every medical researcher on the planet having that, every stock boy on the planet, I'm kind of questioning whether or not they need to know I've had hemorrhoids.
So, I'm going to tell you right now why this would never happen. Let's say such a database existed, and let's say that you had some way to correlate, maybe not individuals like to the identification number you're talking about, but let's say people could figure out where people worked. Imagine the insider trading you can do. When you start figuring out, oh, well, look at that, 60% of that corporation's senior leadership, you know, they all drink, smoke heavily and have heart issues and diabetes. Probably don't want to invest in them. I mean,
I don't know. Rockefeller did all of those things. Who created more wealth in the 20th century than just about every other human being on the planet combined in his lifetime?
Again, that's an argument for not sharing that crap, because if people knew all this about him...
Everyone knew he was doing it. It was not considered bad to drink and smoke. So this was a time where he wasn't keeping it secret because it wasn't shunned.
Gotcha.
Everyone knew he was doing it, so that's priced in. How many trillions of dollars of wealth did he create? He saved the whales.
I'm not arguing against that. I'm just arguing
your point that if someone knew the board of directors drank and smoke heavily, that's not going to tank a company.
Well, okay, what if you knew the board of most of the board of directors all had some form of illness? Because most people, when they get older, have health issues.
Depends on the illness. Now, if it were they have dementia or they have Alzheimer's, then yes, that's going to tank the company for about 4 seconds until they're fired.
Yeah.
Now, they have cancer. So, what type of cancer? They have ass cancer? Great. He's lucid up until he dies.
So
you're either saving the company because you're getting rid of someone who's incompetent, where they're probably not going to be board of directors material at that point, or you're not doing anything other than possibly embarrassing an old guy. And depending on the treatments he's on, they may find out, oh, Bob on board of directors of Ford, he has ass cancer. He's been huffing glue and sticking Cheetos in his butt, and he survived for 18 years longer than we planned. Maybe huffing glue and shoving Cheetos up your butt is a treatment. We run that up the flagpole, see if anyone salutes. Oh, it didn't? He just has this really cool gene in his body that we didn't know anyone else had? After, you know, we do a autopsy and actually run his full genome? It wasn't the Cheetos, it was just he was born lucky. Maybe we can turn Bob's extra gene into a cure, which actually happened from someone who had cervical cancer. They kept the cancer, grew it out for a while, created gene therapy out of it. So, yeah, public information of medical records. Other than embarrassment, there's not a lot of bad to come out of it.
Well, I'm also thinking the moment you get diagnosed with certain diseases, like, you know, Alzheimer's or something, it's like you're going to be immediately fired. It's like, oh, no, it's not going to affect him for years, but we don't want to take a chance. So, I don't know.
Like that, it opens the company up to liability if they knew that person had a...
Well, there's a difference between pre-existing... Right now, we can't say you have Alzheimer's by looking at your genome. We can say you're predisposed to it. But once you're finally diagnosed with it, how old are you, and should you really be doing that job?
So let me just throw the example out there. I'm worried you would create a Gattaca-style system by doing that.
Yeah, that's what I think would happen, too. Because let's face it, we've got no regulation in the major companies right now that are running this data. That needs to be addressed.
Wait a minute. Medical companies, no regulation. What country do you live in?
No. He's talking about big data companies and the way they handle other data, not medical data.
Yeah, okay. Not medical data. If you can correlate that data with the medical data, it's sketchy, man.
Yeah, I get sketched out by it. That's all.
Well, especially if you get your genome done the minute you're born, or even prenatal sometimes. In utero, is it? Yeah, that would be the one.
In utero.
Yeah. So you get your DNA done there, and it shows you have a potential for this, this, and this. Yeah, that's really starting you on the back foot if the next kid that's born is, well, he doesn't have this, this, or this, and he's good. You know what I mean? Then you combine that DNA stuff with the Kroger card, like you're saying, that Madman buys chips and salsa and cries on a Sunday morning at 3 a.m. in the car park. You know, marry that up, you know, with a propensity for depression, and suddenly Madman's getting taken into HR and going, hey, look, here's a 6 foot of rope and there's a tree out back. Go finish it off, man.
Damn!
Well, he's eating chips and salsa in a Kroger car park at 3 in the morning. Come on.
Well, who all has done that? I mean,
exactly. You know, I am wept uncontrollably.
It was just damn good salsa. I mean, you know.
if there is data to the grave, man, I could see it getting a little Gattaca, even if they had all the protections under the sun.
But Madman's got a good point about all the medical research that could come out of this. I get kind of skeeved out by some of the ideas of where this could go. That's all.
Yeah. Definitely has its good points, but it has, if it goes wrong, it's going to go really wrong really quick.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it.
I mean, I think it would snowball to where it's out of control, and we'd get to the point where the politicians are at with the idea of regulations and the internet and stuff like that, going, it's all too hard, fuck it. Or just let it go. It'll sort itself out eventually. I think that's the approach that they're taking with Facebook and things like that.
Oh, God, I wish that was the approach they were taking. It's not.
I don't see them doing anything at the moment. Facebook, Twitter, and all that, just do whatever they want right now.
Well, apparently Zuckerberg's going to go back up there for a few more rounds of hearings, so we'll see what comes of that. but
a lot more sipping of awkward water. This is how humans drink water.
I've been to training. I'm going to do much better this time.
How is transparency a bonus for transparency? That cannot be. That I don't know if that section should be in the.
All right. Well, let's get the last point here. Transparency. Most people don't think about how often their image is captured on a given day. For instance, the average American is photographed roughly 15 times during their drive to the supermarket. Yeah, but they're mostly speeding cameras, dude. On that same trip. Well, that and security cameras. They'll typically appear in about 90 seconds of video without ever knowing about it. The calls and texts they make will be on the way will be monitored. The metadata will be sent instantly to databases around the globe and into the cloud, where it will be immediately, most likely, available to a select few. Our smartphones are broadcasting our exact location at every moment, possibly sending the information to governments around the world, certainly to the NSA and many others of which we are not aware. But why should that information be limited only to a few? If we stopped demonizing the sharing of data, perhaps our information might be treated more democratically, as it was in simpler times when transparency was a common thread among villages and towns. Community members shared everything with each other. Everyone knew everything about you, your favorite color and food, what made you laugh, your kids' names. Now we guard all that information because we are so afraid someone is going to use it against us. Well, how is somebody going to use that against you in the 1800s?
Exactly.
Yeah, nobody gave a shit back then. Today, people do. So
today, if you eat the wrong fucking food, you may have a whole PETA mob going after you.
Well,
I do believe transparency could actually fix that. More people eat at KFC than join PETA. If they go after all of us, we will finally give a shit and shit on fucking PETA. Fuck you, PETA.
So
and Antifa.
The last bit of the article here, having large sums of data and metadata in the hands of only a few allows them to dictate the flow of the information, could set the stage for societal peril. Once information flows freely, governments will be forced to follow suit with transparency. No, they won't.
No, they won't.
Privacy, as we know it, will never return to pre-internet times. Instead of looking backward, let's look forward and embrace a world where less privacy may be a good thing.
This whole argument of less privacy is still not democratizing the less privacy.
This guy's
private because Facebook's skimming my shit. What do you want, Facebook and MySpace and Bob's Burgers skimming my shit?
This guy's the CEO of Grey Castle Security. What does Grey Castle Security do? I'm just curious.
I'm starting to think this guy doesn't have a drinking problem. He's way too upbeat and happy, man. You know, I bet you he's a teetotaler.
Grey Castle, get your own fucking virtualized. So they're just outsourcing security management. Okay, well, I don't know. Where he's coming from on this is weird. I'm because he doesn't really back up any of his arguments very well. So
maybe he's just throwing it out there and looking for opinion.
Well, that could be. It could totally be a spoof article just trying to get attention.
Oh, you know, it could be the same as, what was that dude in Google who just put out that memo without really thinking it through?
Yeah.
But he actually threw out his arguments on how you could increase the number of women employed in engineering at Google. He was solving the problem. He just didn't realize that he was sending something out to social justice warriors that you had to think about, and social justice warriors don't think.
I don't know. The article is a lot in there.
Backed up his stuff. The Google guy did.
Yeah. Wrong bad example, but...
Yeah, this guy didn't really put out anything to support his arguments. Some very weak, tenuous stuff, but no real... it's like, oh, governments will be forced to follow suit. Why? No, they won't. How?
Well, let's just say he's framed a starting point for the discussion.
That's
broken into sections.
That's fair.
I'm not shitting on the guy. I'm glad that there's somebody out there who sees rainbows and unicorns and doesn't drink heavily.
Oh, sorry. You were serious.
yeah, I am, actually, because it's a lot of negativity in the security and stuff like that. Interesting starting point. That's how I'm going to leave this article.
All right, Madman, you got any final thoughts on it?
Well, If we're just going point by point, I think he has a point with the live longer, even though I don't think he backed it up. He could have. The whole convenience, when it comes to retail, sure, sell me stuff, make it more convenient. But that's not the only thing our information is being used for. We've already made it too convenient for, like I said, financial transactions. I want some of those to be difficult. And his whole reduced crime, that was just, that doesn't exist. That's not happening.
Yeah.
He's saying we'll make only the black checkers valuable, and then people will stop stealing the red ones. Yep. They stopped stealing the red ones. We're now stealing the black ones. Whatever.
So, I wish he would have had some, I'm wondering if this is like, he's been having tons of conversations with people and he just didn't do a good job of summarizing it.
That could be it.
I wish he would have given some better points to argue against, because a lot of this is just too easy to write off.
I think a lot of it is just feeling around in the dark to see if he can get some answers.
Oh, that could be. I mean, some of the ideas about all this data that's collected out about you forcing it to be public, I mean, I could see that having some benefit, just so you, again, because I like the idea of awareness. I don't think you should be prevented from sharing your data if you want to, and I don't think companies should be prevented from collecting it. I just think it all should be on the up and up. You should know what they're doing, and they should be honest about it.
I think it should be opt-in, not opt-out, so you know.
Yes.
I'm hitting yes a lot, but at least I know there's a lot of people collecting my shit now.
Right. I mean, I feel like it should just be, it's always the shock to people when they pull up, you know, previous location history in their iPhone and realize their phone has been following their pathing for months. You know, I mean, seriously, anybody who has an iPhone, they don't know this. Just pull up location history. If you haven't, like, killed all the location stuff, you're going to see that it's following you. It's tracking you constantly. And, you know, might say,
and you're a very boring person.
Yeah,
you're
probably.
The same places every fucking day.
Yeah, probably. And, you know, you might think, well, that's great. If I ever get kidnapped, they can use that data to try to figure out where I am. And, you know, that's an argument. But at the same time, if the world changes and now everyone who goes to Jamba Juice is going to the concentration camps, and there's the iPhone giving away that you go to Jamba Juice 3 times a week. I don't know why I'm picking on Jamba Juice, probably because they've not paid us to not say their name. but, you know, I don't know why the world would change that way, but stranger things have happened. So,
especially with all the socialist talk at the moment.
Oh, I know.
Big data list like this really nailed down who needs to be kicked out of the party.
I'm sorry, you've been denounced by Facebook. You'll need to get on the train.
Yeah,
God.
Pretty much.
God, that was dark.
Yeah.
Man, I'm sorry about this. I hope this doesn't ruin your day. Now I'm just going to nose down and call it a night.
Godspeed. Yeah, we'd definitely make it easy to pick out political opponents, things like that.
Well, especially in an age when you have so many violent protests against people you politically disagree with. I mean, that could just be downright dangerous. I mean, it's already bad, you know, with the doxing and people losing their jobs and stuff. But, I mean, you have groups like Antifa that, you know, there's video of them kicking the shit out of people for disagreeing with them or even being perceived to disagreeing with them. Like the dude slamming
shit out of their own members.
Well, I mean, they're like, you know, that guy going around smacking people in the head with a bike lock and shit like that. I mean, if all of your data's out there and it's like, oh, well, nope, here's all the Republican voters. I mean, you might have people going around door to door doing shit kickings to, you know, to keep you from voting. I mean, I don't know. I feel like there are parts of this argument that could have been made better and we could have an interesting conversation about. And then there's other parts of it that you just want to shut it down immediately because it's like, nope, that is crazy dangerous. So,
on that, I don't think the problem is whether or not information is public or private. We need to go back to the idea of, I will defend to the death your right to say something, even if I disagree with what you're saying. That's dying in this country, and it's sad.
Yeah.
I mean, the ACLU fought for the rights of Nazis to go speak in a predominantly Jewish community back in the 60s. I mean, hate Nazis all you want. I think that was fucking awesome that they were able to say that. Now, I would have been in the group saying, let's kill the Nazis, you know, right across the street from where they were speaking. But they were allowed to speak.
And I'd be the one holding you back going, madman, we can't kill them. I know we want to kill them, but we can't, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I could argue why their ethos was wrong, but shouting for death is so much easier.
Easy. Yeah. Just because it's easier doesn't make it right. All right. Let's move on here since I do have some other stuff to cover. Most of it is kind of meh, but this one I thought was interesting. It's from the BBC. Emails while commuting should count as work. Commuters are so regularly using travel time for work emails that their journeys should be counted as part of the working day, researchers say. Wider access to Wi-Fi on trains and the spread of mobile phones has extended the working day, a study from the University of the West End of England says. The study examined 5,000 rail passengers on commuter routes in London as Wi-Fi became available. I'm a busy man and I rely on that time, one commuter told researchers. It's really important to my sanity that I can get work done on the train, she said, on the Aylesbury to London route. The study, to be presented at the Royal Geographical Society on Thursday, found that 54% of commuters were using the train's Wi-Fi were sending work emails. Others were using their own mobile phone connections for work emails. Those on the way to work were catching up with emails sent ahead of the coming day, while those on the return journey were just finishing off work not completed during regular working hours. It's dead time in a way, so that allows me to do is finish stuff and not work in the evenings, said a commuter on the London to Birmingham route. The study examined the impact of free Wi-Fi being upgraded on the London to Birmingham and London to Aylesbury routes. It showed that as internet access improved, it had the effective consequence of extended working hours using laptops and mobile phones. For commuting parents, it was also seen as a transition where they switched roles from being part of a family to a working environment. There were other commuters who liked the buffer of being able to work while traveling. The majority of the time, it's an option for me, you know, clear the decks for the day, relax, and put work behind me more than anything else, said a passenger on the London-Birmingham route. But the findings raise questions about the work-life balance and whether it is healthy to stretch out the working day with people routinely answering emails beyond office hours. You have no fucking idea. If the journey has become part of work, it should also be recognized as part of working hours. Researcher Dr. Juliet Yuan said the smartphones and mobile internet access has caused a blurring of boundaries between work and home life, and this now applied to the journey to work. How do we count that time? Do workplace cultures need to change? She asked. Instead of technology giving people more flexibility over working, the study showed that people were working extra hours on top of their time in the office. There's a real challenge in deciding what constitutes work, said Dr. Juan from the university's Center for Transport Society. Counting the journey as work could ease commuter pressure on peak hours travel, she said, allowing more staggered travel times. But Dr. Juan said that it also meant that employers would want more surveillance and accountability for how commuters were spending that time before arriving at their desks. Business leaders recognized the difficulties of setting boundaries, such as work emails and mobile technology, and warned it could damage productivity if work became too pervasive. This increasing flexibility has the potential to radically shift the work-life balance for the better, but it also leaves open the door to stress and lower productivity, said Jamie Kerr of the Institute of Directors. With the concept of clocking on and clocking off no longer straightforward, defining where leisure begins and work ends will be vital for both employers and individuals, as well as a complex task for regulators. Matthew Percival of the CBI's head of employment said a common sense approach is needed, giving individuals the tools to manage the work-life balance. Yeah, I don't know about that. I know a lot of companies don't give a fuck about work-life balance. I mean, I may have used my cell phone to remote into an Active Directory domain controller and change group policy while driving. So, I mean,
the question here I don't think is, should people work or not work on the commute to work? The question is, do you feel that you're being properly compensated?
Hmm.
That's not a bad point.
Because my job, I have the 9-to-5 job. They're only going to pay me from 9 to 5. If I want more pay, I work 9 to 7. I work 9 to 5. All the people I know that work outside of work, they don't have the 9-to-5 job. They have the salary job. Now, in boom times, that sucks because they're being asked to work 60, 70, 80 hours in what would be a 40-hour work week, and no one wants to have me do that because they'll be paying me a shit ton of money. But on the upside, in slow times, hourly workers, they get their checks cut because they're only working 20, 25 hours or 30 hours. The salaried dude might only be working those hours, but he's also still getting paid the 40 hours or whatever the salary he was asked to work for. So it's, does your salary compensate you for I'm texting on my way to work? If it doesn't, negotiate a better salary. Or find a job that's less strenuous.
Well, this is also coming from the BBC. So, you know, it's based out of Britain, and they have different laws when it comes to counting employment time.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. And you're right, I mean, about the salary part, that if you're putting in all this extra hours and all this extra time, you should be appropriately compensated for it. Even if your salary, they should just raise your damn salary to cover it, right? Or
the way I did it with my previous job, man, was when 5 o'clock came, the phone turned off. And I did this day one, man. I turned my phone off that afternoon, the first day. Come to work the next day, they're like, hey, you didn't reply to me. Yeah, because you sent the message after 5 o'clock. If you want me to reply, do it before 5. They're like, no, it doesn't work like that. And I'm like, yes, it does. You just set a precedent. Just start out straight away from day one. I don't do that. And with weekends, man.
That's setting your compensation. You're paying me from 9 to 5.
Yeah.
Want me to work from 9 to 6? Pay me 9 to 6. So how much more money are we paying me?
Yeah.
I'm completely fine with being 24 hours a day on call. But there's a price tag for that.
Yeah. That was the thing, too, because I noticed a lot of people that I worked with were getting texts at like 2 in the morning going, hey, we've got a behavioral issue. You're going to have to deal with it at 7 a.m. when you come in. Like, why are you texting this person at 2 in the morning? They'll deal with it at 7. Like, they just interrupt people's lives constantly because, hey, they're sitting there with a client who's tearing the place up, and they're like, oh, might as well text people because I'm awake.
Yeah, that's usually how it goes, too. But, I mean, you know, shoot, I've been blown up so much lately, it's not even funny. I mean,
yeah, to be fair, more to you, you've got a much heavier role.
And do you think they're going to give you a bonus to compensate for that? Or every time you've gone up for a review, have they made it worth what you were doing?
So,
I mean, we don't need numbers. A yes or no would be fine.
Every time I've gone up for a review, I have had my compensation improved.
If you think it's adequate, great. If not, time to look around for other places.
Either that
possibly
or set
less
a,
strenuous.
Either that or set a policy.
Yeah, well, I mean, and, you know, I mean, you're right that you may have to. And it's just one of these things that it's just been, and I know it's been taken advantage of a bit lately with all this stuff going on where I work, but it's just.
In your situation, you don't really know if this is constant yet or not. You're going through a one-time major job shift right now.
That's true. That is also
very true. I think the way you handle it, if you handle it well, then I think you'll be compensated for it next go around, if you know what I mean. If everything goes well.
Well, I think I'm handling it well, but, you know, every time I talk to my boss about it, it's made clear that they're happy with me. So, I mean, you know.
Then just, you'll probably be compensated next go around, you know?
Man, that's also dependent on the rules of how all this shakes out. So it's a fairly major shift, but we'll see what happens. So, but you're also right. If this time, because things have changed so significantly, if after all this I don't get some kind of extra consideration, then yeah, it probably will be hunting.
Or setting a new policy.
And just turning the phone off.
Yeah. I mean, do it.
I've actually already disabled email notifications on my phone.
I mean, is this so you get fired over it. Then we take them to court. So your contract stated you worked between 9 and 5. Yeah, and you were fired for not answering emails at 10 at night. Yeah, no, you're going to get compensated for that.
Yeah, that's the bad part about being salaried. So
the problem is you got to think litigiously.
But I do think it's two different questions. I don't bet a lot of hourly workers are getting harassed with emails on their way to work.
No, they're probably not, because they would have to. I know for the hourly workers where I work, if they're doing anything work related, they're expected to clock in. Because uncompensated work is not a lawsuit you want to have.
Oh, no. It costs for thousands of dollars of unpaid. It can cost you millions of dollars down the road. I've had to deal with this in previous employers.
So that's just not an argument you want to even broach. But I don't know. I just thought it was interesting, and I thought it was fun to make the anecdote about the fact that I actually have remoted into AD servers to make group policy changes while driving. So
you pick stories just to show how cool you are, don't you?
I don't think that's cool. I think that's,
I don't know, man. Kind of
sad. Badass. No, it's kind of sad that I'm able to.
Well, how did he die? He was remoting in and he lost control of the car.
So
that's fucking sad, really.
Yep. Next article is from Rock Paper Shotgun. Valve has done a huge amount for gaming on Linux, bringing their store and client to the open source operating system, while encouraged. Don't even dash it. Okay, whatever. Because they're calling the entire thing open source. Whatever. While encouraging and supporting other developers to port more games over, their next step is building tools into Steam, which let Windows games without official Linux versions run seamlessly on Linux, appearing and working like any other Steam game. This expansion of Valve's Steam Play initiative is now in public testing, with initial support for an eclectic lineup of games, including Nier Automata, Doom 2, Doki Doki Literature Club, and Into the Breach. So yeah, they're saying 2018 is now officially the year of the Linux desktop. That's been every year since like 2010, I think, but whatever. Aside from a small notice in Steam, Windows games, which play nicely, will appear in the Steam store and libraries on Linux, and then can be installed and run just like games made for Linux, complete with support for OpenVR and Steamworks. While there was already ways to get many Windows games working on Linux, Valve has been working to integrate these and improve them enough that tuxheads hopefully don't even notice they're playing a game not built for their OS. More developers explicitly making Linux versions is great, sure, but many haven't, aren't, and won't, so this workaround for the rest sounds good. Valve are initially limiting this to a batch of 27 things they're fairly certain run well. Players can change a setting to try to run any Windows game on Linux through this new gubbins, though they may be wonky. Valve do plan over time to expand the whitelist of games which they're confident run fine. For now, they have Beat Saber, Bejeweled 2 Deluxe, Doki Doki Literature Club, Doom 2016, Doom 2 Hell on Earth, Doom VFR, Fallout Shelter, Fate, Final Fantasy VI, Geometry Dash, Google Earth VR, Into the Breach, Magic Gathering 2012 and 2013, Mountain Blade with Fire in Store, Nier Automata, Payday the Heist, Quake, Stalker, Star Wars, Battlefront 2, Tekken, Last Remnant, Tropico 4, Ultimate Doom, and two of the Warhammer 40K games. Blah, 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 blah. What made all this possible, or the heart of this, is Proton, which is a modified version of Wine, the well-established compatibility layer, which lets Windows programs run on Linux. Valve has jazzed it up with improved support for full-screen gaming controllers and improved performance through better multitasking or multi-threading, plus DirectX and DirectX 12 implementations based on Vulkan. They're not doing a good job of explaining that, but that's okay. All of this builds on a number of Linux projects Valve has been collaborating on and contributing to for a while, tied up in a with a steaming bow. A performance difference is to be expected for games where graphic API translation is required, but there's no fundamental reason for a Vulkan title to run any slower. Valve's Pierre Louis Grifols explained, I've not had a Linux box since 2001, the year of the Linux desktop, so I can't test myself, but if I guess you, Linux 2001 was the year of the Linux desktop. That joke's been going for a while. But if you're using Linux, prepared for a little hardship. What? Okay. Don't expect to run everything on Linux. As Grafis notes, it's likely that some games using complex DRM or anti-cheat systems will be difficult or impossible to support. So what they're not explaining here is a few of the other things that Valve have done that made this really cool. What they're doing is packaging Wine with a few other, they've got their own patches they're putting into it, and they're contributing stuff back to Wine, so it's not like they've forked it. I mean, they kind of have, but what they're really doing is taking their own extensions and packaging it. They're also putting in DX to VK, which is the translation layer they're talking about. But again, Valve didn't write that, but they have been contributing to it and financially supporting it. And that's converting your DirectX calls to Vulkan, which does run pretty nicely on Linux machines. So the really, really nice part about this has nothing to do with the Steam implementation, which is cool because it makes it easier. They've open sourced all of it. The Proton project is on GitHub, and you can go download it without having to install Steam on your machine. So that part, it's actually really fucking cool. So they're doing this the right way in that they're going to the existing projects, and instead of just forking them off, they're supporting them and then just kind of putting their own wrapper around all of it to package it up with Steam. So I imagine when this gets a little bit more developed, a little bit farther on, most people won't have a great excuse to have to run a Windows desktop anymore if they just want to, you know, web browse, play games.
Yeah.
It'll come down to if you have a need for specialty software or you have hardware that will not be supported on Linux for whatever reason.
I take back many of the bad things I've said about you, Valve, for not continuing your game development. Not all of them, because I still like playing video games more than I like working on Linux. But I take back a lot. of me calling you a lazy fucking bastard. Because this is cool. It's nice to know that even though you're not making video games, you're making it where I can potentially play video games on something other than Windows. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Because if Windows continues its current trend, it's going to become so obnoxious to run that you'll have people looking at the various Linux SKUs just to get away from the constant ads and shit being installed in your machine. And, you know, I mean, that alone is annoying enough, but I've never had a Linux system reset all the shortcuts in my main menu so that they could show me Candy Crush and Xbox. So I think what you're going to end up seeing at some point, because this is still early days for this, but they're building it on mature products. So, or mature projects, I should say. So this has the potential to become something really cool very quickly. And Cycross, you're absolutely right. They are putting a wrapper around existing stuff, but they're contributing back to the existing projects. And that's the part that I think is really cool. So it won't be very long before you see somebody do a custom SKU of Fedora or Ubuntu or something totally based around running this package at optimal performance and giving you a Windows-like desktop and just, you know, putting it out there saying, here, one-click install this. It's all open source. You have control of your system. It'll have some YouTube videos showing you how to use it. And, you know, the next time somebody's Windows install blows up because they, you know, were looking at porn and got a virus, or, you know, they just had a Windows update go sideways and they finally said the hell with it, they'd be like, oh, here was an option. It looks like most of my stuff will work on it. I think, because right now you do see people get annoyed enough with Windows that they go full Linux, but usually it's somebody who's already doing something in IT or already knows something about it. It's very rare that you see somebody who just has nothing to do with the computer other than Facebook and games go Linux. But this at least makes that possible. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
interesting.
I just like the option to be out there. That's all.
Yeah. We'll see where it is in a year from now.
You're right, because they tried to do the whole Linux-supported SteamOS stuff, and that just kind of bombed. Although,
yeah, that's what I said. It sounds good. Let's have a look at it from a year from now.
Well, I mean, if they incorporate all this back into SteamOS, that could make that a thing again, too.
Yeah.
So, especially if they ever get around to fixing the damn installer for the thing. Next article is from Ars Technica. And I wanted to talk about this one a little bit. There was a fantastic thread on Reddit, and I think somebody's deleted it because I couldn't find it again when I was doing my show notes. Microsoft obliquely acknowledges Windows Zero Day bug published on Twitter. A privilege escalation flaw in Windows 10 was disclosed earlier this week on Twitter. The system, the flaw allows anyone with the ability to run code on a system to elevate their privileges to system level, the level used by most parts of the operating system and the nearest thing that Windows has to an all-powerful superuser. This kind of privilege escalation flaw enables attackers to break out of sandboxes and unprivileged user accounts so they can more thoroughly compromise an operating system. Let's see. I'll read the rest of the article, then we'll read the actual tweet. Microsoft has not exactly acknowledged the flaw's existence. Instead, it offered a vague and generic statement. Windows has a customer commitment to investigate reported security issues and proactively update impacted devices as soon as possible. Our standard policy is to provide solutions via our current update Tuesday schedule. So if the flaw is acknowledged, and certainly real, then the company will most likely fix it in a regular update released on the second Tuesday of each month. The tweet links to a GitHub repository that contains a write-up of the issue and demonstrates code, or in demonstration code to execute the flaw. The bug lies in the test scheduler service. It includes an improperly secured API that allows an attacker to overwrite most of the files on the system with the contents of their choosing. By overwriting a file that's subsequently loaded into a privileged system-level process, the attacker can run code of their choosing with system. The proof of concept overwrites a file used by Windows printing subsystem. Windows will then run the attacker's code when an attempt is made to print. In the initial tweet publicizing the flaw, the researcher expressed some nonspecific dissatisfaction with Microsoft, though she later backtracked, saying Microsoft is actually a cool company and that she's struggling with depression. So the actual tweet says, "Here's the ALPC bug as O-Day," and she has the link. "I don't care about life anymore, neither do I ever again want to submit to MSFT. Anyways, fuck all of this shit." And the thread on Reddit was people going through this person's Twitter because she sounded suicidal.
Wow.
And all of the articles were publishing this tweet with the "I don't care about life anymore," right? And nobody was talking about the fact that this person was suicidal. Now, the thread did some research on this person. Apparently, they're trans, and they're not doing well in the job market, and they don't like the IT market. So, but it was kind of amazing that everybody was focusing on this O-Day and not on the person over there cutting in the corner. So,
they're 44%. They're trans, dude. It's gonna happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, I don't care about that part. I'm just saying it's just kind of funny that everybody's publishing this tweet, which does sound suicidal, and like, yep, here's an O-Day. So, I don't know. I thought there was an odd dichotomy there.
Yeah, I think people have just got zero fucks to give anymore.
Well, that's a fair point.
Unless they're a virtual signaling asshole. Like,
okay.
That's just a whorish thing to do. I don't want to live anymore. I'm going to send that tweet.
Like, yeah.
You're all an right. Attention whore at that point.
Fair enough. I just thought it was interesting.
Do it in silence.
Damn. Although I think I did open a decking by saying start with yourself. But anyways.
Yeah, well. So. I just got too much shit to do to give a fuck about some transgendered person.
Well, that's why I was a little disappointed the Reddit thread was deleted, because they were doing research on this person trying to figure out, does somebody need to go check on them or not, right? Is this somebody crying for attention, or is this actually somebody who's going to, you know, suck start a shotgun?
They decided they either yes or no, and then deleted the thread to cover up the decision.
So, anyways, their link, it's apparently the exploit code, a few people tested it out, works great on a fully patched system, so.
Oh.
Cycros, I recognize the fucking Pink Floyd quote. That's fine. Next article is from nextgov.com. Let me get the sound effect ready. We're going to need this. Any criminal worth their salt knows to wipe their crime scene for fingerprints, but some go a step further and try to erase the prints from their fingers entirely. For decades, the practice of altering fingerprints has helped wrongdoers evade the law, but today the FBI thinks artificial intelligence could help catch those who especially or those especially ambitious offenders. The Bureau on Friday asked the tech industry to weigh in on how AI tools could detect altered fingerprints and match them to their unaltered counterparts in the next generation identification system, the FBI's massive biometrics database. The Criminal Justice Information Services Division has identified a growing trend in which criminals intentionally alter their fingerprints to defeat identification within the NGI system, officials wrote in a request for information. As those who seek to avoid identification continue to evolve their alteration techniques, it is critical that the NGI system maintain pace through the ability to learn in real time. The explanations behind altered fingerprints are as varied as the prints themselves, and not all are rooted in illegal intention. Criminals might mask their identities using acid, surgery, or a number of other techniques. God, acid? Normally you want to avoid intentionally dipping your fingers in acid, just saying.
When you're wanted by Interpol, you'll do pretty much anything.
But frequent contact with chemicals and rough surfaces, as well as certain diseases and medical treatments, could also unintentionally change fingerprints. Whatever the cause, the FBI said it wants everyone to be identifiable to the NGI system. Officials reported potential vendors detail the applications and real-time learning capabilities of their artificial intelligence platform and describe ways it could automate the biometric identification process. After assessing the different technologies, the FBI will select groups to prototype a system that can distinguish a normal fingerprint pattern from an irregular pattern, according to the RFI. Ultimately, officials said they're looking for a system that can automatically teach itself variations of any given fingerprint without explicit training. So
that just sounds lazy to me.
Yeah. I'm also thinking, how many people just have their fingerprints fucked up anyways? Like, I know neither one of my index fingers will read on most fingerprint readers anymore.
My middle finger is completely fucked up from acid.
Here's something that's kind of scary if you haven't heard it before. But this came from a professor at an actual college. The sample size we have of fingerprints, it's so small that we can't actually say statistically that fingerprints aren't repeating. With the number of people in New York City alone compared to the number of fingerprints we have on file to compare it to, it's possible that more than one person in that city has the same fingerprints.
Or, well, they don't actually compare the entire print, so it could just be similar enough that they have the same markers.
Isn't it like a 12-point check?
It depends on the system they're using. I think some of them are 12-point. I know a lot of times what the imaging optical scanners will do is they're looking for a handful of different marks, and then they'll hash the whole thing so you get a number. And the idea is you're supposed to get it within a certain variance. So, not quite certain how that works, because, you know, at that point you're doing fuzzy math, but okay. It's one of the reasons why fingerprint scanners usually take a second or two, is because it's sitting there taking multiple pictures over and over again, hoping to get a match. But, you know, I mean, hell, anybody who works with sandpaper or things that are sharp on a regular basis, I'm sure their fingerprints change all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, just from the scar tissue.
Oh, yeah. not even intentionally. I'm betting a carpenter's fingerprints are going to be completely different year after year. So, I don't.
And his finger count may be different from year to year.
Nine, that's a bad carpenter.
Eight, seven. Hey, man, I knew a great carpenter only had seven fingers.
Seven fingers and next year thumb. Had next year had eight fingers. Wait a minute. So.
Hell, when he cut his seventh finger off, I actually took him to the hospital so they could reattach it.
Yep. Well, I mean, did that carpenter at least... Well, I mean, maybe not, because, you know, he was down to six fingers at one point there. Did he learn what not to do around the rotating saw?
Yeah. Well, they weren't all sore accidents, let's just say that.
Fuck. What'd you do? I lost a finger with a chisel. Wait, what?
Well, that was
concrete
one.
Mixer. I know someone who lost part of their finger to a concrete mixer.
Yeah, he lost one to a chisel, one to a nail, and one from an exploding nail gun.
Ow!
But, shoot. I forget what caliber it was, but it fires.
Was it one that shot blanks and used the nail as the projectile?
Yeah.
I played with those, one that did 22 caliber rounds and went all the way up to 45.
Yeah, fucking the round exploded. The gun blew
his finger.
Oh, that's
not his fault. That's a tool failure.
Yeah, that's what I said. Not all of these are his fault.
Okay.
But yeah, that's nailing shit into concrete.
Yeah, construction's a dangerous job.
I got to play with that in high school. They don't let you play with cool stuff in school these days.
Nah. They're a real puss attitude towards shop class these days.
A lot of places don't even have it.
Yeah. All right, last article. This one is from motherboard.vice.com. On Tuesday, developers behind Lerna revoked access for any company collaborating with U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
That's mature of them.
Now, there's an update from earlier today where they've reversed this, but we're going to go ahead and read the article. In the last few months, United States Immigration and Customs Enforcement has come under fire for human rights abuses in its immigrant detention facilities. Activists called to abolish ICE entered the mainstream after it was revealed that ICE agents were authorized by the Department of Justice to separate children as young as a few months old from their families and keep them in cage-like holding cells. I thought they were mostly getting fostered out.
They were. The cage-like holding cells, those are some pictures that got leaked from the Obama administration.
Okay, thank you. I couldn't remember, but I'm like, wait a minute, I don't remember cage-like holding cells. I thought the whole point was that they weren't going to keep, you know, an infant in jail because their parents tried to immigrate illegally.
Yeah, the kids are held for about 24 hours with their parents, long enough to get DHS there. And then they're stuck in a foster home. The foster homes vary from being pretty cool looking to being a crappy, crappy foster home.
Gotcha. Although the DOJ has spent the last few weeks trying to reunite the children with their families, many are unsatisfied with this result and has resorted to direct action. On Tuesday, the developers behind a widely used open source code management software called Lerna modified the terms and condition of its use to prohibit any organization that collaborates with ICE from using the software. Among the companies and organizations that were specifically banned were Plantier, Microsoft, Amazon, Northeast University, Motorola, Dell, UPS, and Johns Hopkins University. Although all of these companies have contracted with ICE, not all of them have implemented Lerna. According to the developers of the software, only Microsoft and Plantier are confirmed to use Lerna, although LinkedIn employees have told the developers that the company also uses the program. Recently, it has come to my attention that many of these companies, which are being paid millions of dollars by ICE, are also using some of the open source software that I helped build. James Kyle, an open source developer and one of the lead programmers from the Lerna project, wrote in a statement, "It's not news to me that people can use open source for evil. That's part of the whole deal. But it's really hard for me to sit back and ignore what these companies are doing with my code." So we've now defined ICE as evil. Okay, entire government
agency.
He's
defending a Nazi. He is protecting a fucking Nazi. One of them. In New Jersey, ICE seized an SS officer who murdered many Jews and sent them back to Germany. You are defending a Nazi, sir. I don't get to say that very often.
Wait, am I defending the Nazi for disagreeing with what they're saying about it being evil, or the guy writing the article?
The guy who doesn't want his code being used by ICE.
Okay.
He is defending a Nazi.
Thank you. I needed the clarification. It's like, wait, how am I defending a Nazi? What the fuck?
Oh. Morps may or may not be defending Nazis. This dude definitely is. I'm going to assume he's not at the moment, but wait till he's drinking.
Well, yeah, I can't account for what drunk Morps does. He buys weird domains and starts radio programs that we're still somehow doing 8 years later. Anyways,
you know what? This guy needs to take his little virtual signaling ass and harden the fuck up, you soft cock. What a fucking fag.
Go ahead.
Dude, if this guy's sitting there going, yeah, you know what I did? I changed the fucking EULA so the fucking ICE Nazis can't fucking do anything. Dude, just slap him.
Because they're going to pay attention to that. Actually, the way open source. The funny part is the way open source works. Okay, so your latest version of the software, fine, we pulled it down 3 days ago when the old one still applied. And, so we're just not going to install your updates. Have a nice life.
We're just not going to install the updates.
Yeah, well, it's open source. We're just going to fork it and do our own that's not encumbered by your politics. Have a nice life. So when I emailed with Kyle, that's the author speaking, he told me that he had been aware for a few years that Plantier was using the Lerna software, but after seeing an ACLU video depicting a toddler who was detained by ICE for several months, being reunited with his family and unable to look his mother in the face, Kyle said he could no longer tolerate his software being used by ICE collaborators. Lerna is a monorep software that helps companies manage large amounts of code by bringing them together in one place. This helps the organizations keep track of changes made to the code and makes the whole development process a lot less messy. Historically, monoreps were developed internally by large companies, but Lerna made them available for smaller organizations too. It turned out to be such a good program that major companies like Planeteer and Microsoft also began using the open source version developed by Kyle and his colleagues. So if you knew anything about Microsoft's code management, anything would help them at this point. Their build system is such a fucking mess. There are many types of open source licenses, but one of the most popular and the most version used by Lerna is the MIT license. Yeah, so MIT is one of the most permissive open source licenses out there. If you really, really had any, you should have at least been using GPL if you're going to try to insert this shit in there. This open source license is one of the most permissive and allows a project to take open source software and use it in any project they choose to do so, even if that project itself is not open source. Before he changed the license, Kyle left a comment on Planeteer's GitHub asking the company to stop using the software. Apologies to any contributors who aren't employees of Planeteer, but to those who are, please find jobs elsewhere and stop helping Planeteer do horrible things. Kyle wrote last week, linking to an article in The Intercept about the company's collaboration with ICE. Also, stop using my tools. I don't support you, and I don't want my work to benefit your awful company. Welcome to the world of open source, buddy. If you put it out there in the public square, you don't get to say who uses it and who doesn't. On Tuesday, Plantier responded to Kyle's comment, thanking him for his contributions to Lerna and other open source projects. We appreciate your concerns. Based on the article you linked to, Plantier representative wrote, we would like to clarify Planeteer's contracts with Homeland Security Investigations, the ICE directives, responsible for investigating serious transnational criminal activities such as human trafficking, child exploitation, and counterterrorism, as opposed to the activities theorized in the article. Planeteer then closed the comment thread to further discussion. Motherboard has reached out to Planeteer and Microsoft for comment and will update if they hear back. Tech companies' cooperation with ICE has become controversial, blah, 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 blah. Basically, and then earlier today, they reverted their license back. Did they say why? I'm just quickly. Part of the deal, anyone can use open source or evil. Kyle's modification of the Lerna license was originally assented to by their lead developers on the project, but the decision polarized the open source community. Some applauded the principle. Eric Raymond, blah, blah, blah. Lerna has defected from the open source community and should be shunned by anyone who values the health of that community, Raymond wrote on a blog post. They're saying that they were arguing that that change violated the spirit of open source because open source software is supposed to be politically agnostic. And so they convinced the project to revert it. And they actually removed the guy. Kyle was removed from the project for violations.
Good.
Yeah. On Thursday morning, Stockman removed Kyle as a contributor and issued an apology for the changes. Stockman described the license change as a rash decision that was unenforceable. As for why Kyle was removed from the project, Stockman cited several past violations of Lerner's code of conduct. It's actually not the first time an open source contributor tried to insert their politics into it. There was, I can't think of her name now. But she had a, she had a beef with a, open source convention and, you know, bro coders and stuff like that, and threw a fit about it and got herself kicked off their project too. So,
and good on them. Good on the open source people for keeping it, you know, pretty much politically agnostic, as you said.
Well, it needs to be, because very quickly it's going to devolve into a mess if you let people do that.
Yeah, and good on them.
You can't use this version of the Linux kernel unless you vote for weed legalization. Yeah, good luck with that. So,
how many more forks of Linux are we making now?
Well, that's my point. Is if you're gonna start saying, okay, this open source code is only available if you vote Democrat, or this open source code is only available if you vote Republican, okay, I'm just gonna fork your code and change your license. I mean, that's how open source kind of works. Now, if it's GPL, I mean, and depending on the license, that could be more or less done. But it's like, okay, I'm just going to go find the version before you put that in your license and fork it there. So
this version can only be used by Unitarian Universalists.
Anyways.
Then I'm going to have to raise my hand as the Catholic in the group. Wait a minute, but I can go to a Unitarian Universalist church and they'll say that I'm right because they have no beliefs. So aren't you saying it can be used by everyone? No.
Galaxy 15 Radio can only be listened to by those who practice absolute neutrality.
Oh, fuck, I'm out.
I was just waiting for somebody to have something from that one. But, fuck. All right. Anyways, let's...
We love you long time.
It's a clip.
Yeah. Yeah, that might actually be worth going back and clipping out. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. Anyways, so first up, I have a interesting project based on a couple of Raspberry Pis. And the guy is billing it as a DIY IPMI system. And, okay, he's updated this since I last looked at it. It used to say IPMI. Now it says IPMI/IPKVM. Cool. This one's been on the back burner for a bit. But because this really is an IPKVM. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, this is a system for remotely managing servers over a web interface. If you go buy a high-end rack-mount server, it's usually going to have an IPMI port in it, which is a network port, and it's going to be running a little ARM computer that gives you a web interface or some sort of management interface. Dell calls theirs iDRAC. IBM, I think, calls it the IMM interface. There's different brandings of them. But the concept is I can remote in through a web interface and turn on or manage the computer and even pop up the
console.
Are you
going back to building your own home automated system again? Because this looks like a part of your home automation system.
Well, that's where the link came from, yeah. Because I wanted a way to, you know, schedule servers coming on when I'm getting home and shit like that, yeah.
Okay.
But that said, this is actually a really cool project because what he's done is he's rigged up a Raspberry Zero to pretend to be a keyboard and mouse for your server, and then he's got some low-cost components to get the video capture, and he's written up a web server and an interface to the thing. And, you know, a link to a relay board so you can actually do power resets on the system. So you can have your Raspberry Pi 3 turning on and off regular computers. you know, like desktop computer. So like if you built a server and you only want it on certain hours of the day, you could use this to schedule it. Or if you didn't want to have a keyboard or mouse hooked up to it all the time, you could use this to be able to remote into it and manage it. And the nice thing about this is, well, you can leave a Raspberry on all day long, and it's not going to use hardly any power. And because it's independent, it's not like installing Remote Desktop or VNC or SSH on your server. You know, if your server is off in the closet or the software on it's gone surprisingly wrong and you need a keyboard, mouse, and monitor on it, this gives you a way to manage it, just like any other IPMI system or KVM system. Because this more closely resembles an IP KVM, which are usually really expensive. It's a remote keyboard, mouse, and video system that usually has a host that you can connect to and, you know, do all the same stuff. But anyways, neat little project. Not too expensive to build out if you were building, you know, home lab, server closet, home automation system. And also parts of it could be quite useful for other projects, like what he's done with the Raspberry Zero, to be able to control the keyboard and mouse over the serial port on the thing. So. And finally, I have this last project called ZeroPatch.com, which I've not ran yet, but it's an interesting concept. Pretty much what this thing does is it installs a little service on your machine, and it modifies binaries in memory as you run them. So you start up a Java applet. This thing goes and modifies Java in memory, not on disk, in memory, every time it's ran. And it will do micro patches to the binary to address vulnerabilities. So you have a system that's vulnerable and you can't reboot it to install a new kernel, or you can't upgrade the Java version because it breaks something. This lets you apply micro patches, and you can turn the individual patches on and off. So if you have one that is screwing with the running of your software, you can figure out which one it is and turn it off. So if you need it specifically to run an old code that's vulnerable to something. But I just thought it was an interesting concept because it's modifying stuff in memory. It's fairly open. They have a development guide, so if you need to write your own patches, you can. I would be leery about just grabbing patches from anywhere. They bill it as all zero impact and zero downtime and all this other stuff. I don't know that it's going to be zero impact, because what you're going to find is by fixing these patches, you're going to break code that depends on these patches. but it's an interesting way of going about it. Like if you have a system where you can't modify the binaries, or there's just not a patch, you know, not an official patch from the manufacturer, there might be one in this zero patch community, because they've apparently written quite a few Java patches and a handful of other systems. So, but anyways, I don't know. They got a little video explaining it. I don't know that it's quite as clean as they point out, and I haven't really had a chance to play with it yet. But I like the concept of actually modifying the binaries in memory, not on disk, so that you don't have to reboot a system. It just starts changing what's running in memory, so that it's, you know, ideally you're fixing vulnerabilities, but I suppose it's possible you could be, because it's the same idea of binary hooking that most exploits use as well. So it's like, hey, let's take the method and use it for good. This thing's probably going to trip every antivirus in the world, though.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, that's all I've really got for tonight. Madman, closing thoughts.
Thinking? We do that on this show?
I'm sorry, what?
The thinking. We do that on this show?
Yeah, sure.
I forgot to. I have no closing thoughts.
Are you closing thoughts?
I'm going to grill me some lunch right now. As soon as the show is over. I'm starving.
All right, well, in the interest of...
I've been thinking about food for the last 30 minutes, sorry.
In the interest of avoiding a hangry, are you? Let's just go ahead and close it out.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
So, have you found out whether or not you can have a...